So you came in here when we were testing, practicing.
Right, and it was very quiet. The sound was low.
The sound was, yeah, and it was just a test for me to, yeah. But you felt nervous that day?
No, I just, I sometimes when I think I'm being funny, I'm not being overtly funny, and it comes across as serious, even though in my head things are very funny.
So you have a laugh track in your head that goes along, and then the people at home just don't know.
More of an irony track.
An irony track.
Have we started?
I liked that. Well, see, this is the thing. We never know. What is the beginning? Well, so you haven't been on the show before. Yeah, I'm recording, but this is like the sound check part.
Oh, it is.
I mean, I might use it.
Okay.
Depending on how interesting we are.
Okay. I tend to do well up top and at the end. The middle...
Well, so I said in the beginning, it's great to have you here, because by the end of the show, I might not really want to say that.
Right.
That was a joke. Thanks for laughing.
I get it now. Yes.
I'm glad you got it now, because the first time I said it, you seemed a little insulted.
No, I just was thinking of something else.
You're like, what a dick. Yeah.
No, I was not thinking that.
Really?
No.
Well, you're in the minority. A lot of people think that. Hello, everybody. And welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Claire, you're laughing already. This is not the funny part of the show. My guest this week is storyteller, painter, comedian, Claire Parton.
Hi.
Are all those things true?
Yes,
storyteller,
I'm also
painter,
an
comedian.
Actor.
Actor.
Yes.
Anything else you want to...
Improviser.
Improviser.
Song improviser.
Okay. All right.
Kitty Mama.
Kitty Mama. And Parton. Is that French?
We don't know what it is.
Because I always want to say, like, Parton. You know what I mean?
You know,
pronounce it in
people
French
want to say it French. I'm not French. But the relative whose name it was, mm-hmm. was a stowaway. He jumped ship before he never went through customs or customs, whatever they call it.
Ellis Island.
Yeah. Although his ship arrived in Louisiana. So he never went through the process. So he could have changed his name from something else and shortened it to Parton. Okay. I could be a Mick Parton. I could be a Partonowski. I don't know. But the going theory is that it's Flemish. Hmm.
We will meet Claire and hear more about her phlegm. This problem. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio. That's where we are. And acsdigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is the always entertaining Claire Parton. Parton. It might be... Anyway.
My whole name is French. Claire Louise Parton.
Well, that's... Yeah, the other
but
parts...
But I'm not French. Yeah. I'm Irish, Scottish, English, Welsh, and German.
Now, how do you know all that if you don't know where Parton is from?
They just, I don't know, they just never found out. And there are a whole bunch of other Partons spelled P-A-R-T-I-N. Uh-huh. There are 6 Claire Partons spelled the same way in the U.S.
Are they Flemish or what?
Well, one of them back during MySpace days, I friended a Claire Parton who lived in Abilene, Texas. Mm-hmm. Her father... Robert Parton spells his name the same as my dad's and was trying to get the website for my dad's name, robertparton.com, for his printing business. I said, no, I own that. It's a memorial website for my father's art. I said, I know a Claire Parton. He says, that's my daughter. So that's kind of weird. But I said, do you know where the origin of our name is from? He said, well, my family thought Irish. I said, well, my family thinks Flemish, but we're not sure. He says, well, I think my family's full of shit. I think you're probably right. I said, I need to meet these people. But
the full of shit people.
Yeah, I want to meet them. I hear weird things about Abilene, though, so I have to go in prepared.
Well, depending on how you work it, if you go there, you can, you know... make it tax deductible. It's obviously a story idea, and you're going for a business reason.
You know it.
Not
that's
a personal reason. It's
that's
a business
great...
creative reason, and you can make it tax deductible.
Yes. Yes, I will show up at the door saying, this is for my tax deduction. Hi, can I talk to you? I know
Abilene,
all about
Texas,
that.
Tax deduction.
I've deducted all sorts of things.
All right. Now, I know I've asked about this before, but you have an unusual hobby to me, which is collecting sofas.
Oh, yes.
Couches. You have a small apartment.
Yes.
In Hollywood.
Yes.
How big is your apartment? Like 700?
750 square feet.
That's what I was going to guess. And you have like 832 square feet of couch in there.
I have four couches.
Four couches.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one's a two-piece sectional, mm-hmm. and then two day beds. Mm-hmm. The day beds are currently, with mid-century modern design, you can remove the legs, so they are currently upright in my alcove, waiting to come out at another time, cover them with some fabric, and voila, sectional.
Yeah. And the thing I find...
Like, I also have a lot of lamps.
You have a lot of lamps, yeah. But they don't take up as much space. So I was piqued, like the curiosity piqued, not the angered piqued, by your interest in collecting couches. But what sustained my interest over time is that pretty much every time I come to your apartment, everything is rearranged.
Totally. Well, some people knit, some people garden. I redecorate. And since I have a small apartment,
yeah,
mid-century furniture is perfect because it's very exchangeable. Small. Lower. It sits yep. lower.
Hey.
But it's nostalgia. I grew up in an Eichler house. I grew up with mid-century modern design, and it's...
Sorry, excuse me for a moment. I got to take care of this. Get this dog thing. Hang on. Chester, come here.
Denzel has abandoned the podcast to go get his dog, Chester, who is chasing some invisible dog down the hallway. And we're back.
You know, I'm going to hear that later.
Right? You will.
When I go in, and I'm going to leave it in.
It's going to be loud, even though I was trying to be soft, because I was right next to the mic.
You said something nasty about me, didn't you? Mean as a host. He's being a bad host. He's going after his dog.
You want me to hate you, and it's just not going to happen, Denzel.
Okay,
no, I'm obsessed with the era, and I think it's kind of arrested development. Like, I'm stuck in this time before my parents got divorced, when we lived in this great house, and life was peachy keen, and...
So that's
groovy,
what you think this
and
is
flower
all about.
Power, and yeah, I'm.
That's what it's about. It reminds you of your childhood, and you want to back to when your parents were together and life was idyllic.
Yeah,
and the furniture evokes that.
Yes, but the other thing is now it's very easy to get that design motif. It's everywhere, but when I started collecting, it really wasn't.
Right,
we were stuck in a lot of oversized Mediterranean yep. pieces. And the only way to get those clean lines was to have the actual vintage stuff. Now you can find much better stuff that isn't vintage.
But in the same style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, when I get my, series, is I will outfit a whole house with new stuff.
New and improved. But you won't get rid of the old stuff.
Yeah, I will.
No.
Yeah, I'll put it out on the curb, and I'll film who's going to come and pick it up.
I think you're too attached to some of those pieces.
No.
No? Okay.
No.
I'm going to change the subject. You've been doing a lot more storytelling.
Yes.
Recently.
Yes.
Right? You got
yes.
your own, you have a show, Moments of Clarity.
Moments of Clarity. C-L-A-I-R-E-I-T-Y. Clarity.
E-I-T-Y. Yeah, I had to really make sure I spelled it properly.
Yes, and the autocorrect on any computer will always change it, so it was a bad idea to spell it that way.
Well, yeah, I've had that problem, too. What is Moments of Clarity, and when and where is it?
It is a storytelling show with five storytellers and one musician telling personal stories. About 10 minutes, some are shorter, some are longer. The singer-songwriters I'm not as picky about because I'm just lucky to get one.
Right.
But the title pretty much says it. I'm looking for stories that have a moment of clarity, preferably funny. I've been using this. Sometimes the easiest way to get stuff done is to just take charge and produce it yourself. So this is forcing me to tell my own stories, which in a weird way is kind of a decluttering for me. I've been going through this whole decluttering thing, and getting the stories out is part of that.
Okay. Because it feels like you have a bunch of stuff not finished. It's
yeah.
just, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, so these stories, what's interesting...
Out of your head and into the world. Declutter.
Yeah, and it brings it to life in a good way. Like, the stories may be stuck in my head, in my memory, but once I tell it, it brings it into present time and changes the meaning. for example, I have three sisters. We all have different versions of the same stories. And that's fun. It's like, oh, I always loved the beef stroganoff our mom made. I hated it. What? How could you hate the beef stroganoff?
That was beef stroganoff.
It was my favorite.
I thought it was tuna.
She made it with rice. It's supposed to be made with noodles. I didn't know that. I was a kid.
Is that a real one for your family? Does it beef stroganoff?
Oh, yeah. That came up a few years ago. And that's a funny thing. I'm like, you know, we're older now. So.
Yeah.
But yeah.
My sister and I also... She says, oh, remember the day that this happened? And I have no recollection of stuff. You know, some stuff because it happened to her. Even though I was obviously there, I didn't care. You know, I was 12 years old.
The first story I wrote from my life was the story of when my mom sat us down to tell us our parents were getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting was the different points of view of the four of us with our reactions, including my youngest sister, who didn't know what it meant. She was only five. I was seven.
So you had a five-year-old. You were seven.
Yeah.
And you had an elder sister.
Two older sisters. Uh-huh. One, Gwen was, I think, 10 at the time, and Leslie was 12. So all of our different reactions. And I didn't cry until I saw everyone else crying. And then I thought, well, I should cry. And, of course, I'm an actor. So... But that was the first story I told, and it was very healing to tell that story and get some laughs. And now I'm doing storytelling because I always try and go for something that's going to challenge me and scare me a little, tug at me a little bit, like I'm scared to do this. Song improv came out of that. Character monologues came out of that. Doing art came out of that. So to me, that's kind of the next frontier, is telling these personal stories that get rid of the shame, you know? Who cares?
Well,
make it funny.
That stuff thrives, those bad feelings to me thrive in the dark. And when we perform it, it brings light to these places, and that's what allows them to heal or be transformed or whatever the hell you want to.
Like your story about your ex-wife and the wedding and the cake.
That was
hilarious.
Cake blocked.
Yes.
Yeah, we can't tell that right now, but it's a true story. And at the end, I was cake blocked.
Yeah.
When I realized that that was the line, I was like, this is.
If you had to go through all that pain to get that one line, it was worth it.
It may not really have been worth it, but line, I mean, I went through it, and so this is what I got. Now, before we lose moments of clarity...
Yeah, I want to finish plugging it.
Yeah, it's a... Not every month.
It's every other month.
Every other month.
Bi-monthly. Yep.
Bi-monthly.
The first Sunday of the month, every other month.
Got it.
The next one is April 2nd.
Okay.
Then June, August, October, December.
Okay, and April 2nd, physically, where will you...
Open space. 457 North Fairfax. It is near Cantor's Deli.
This is in Los Angeles.
It's in Los Angeles. It's a cute little coffee shop with a beautiful space in the back for theater, music.
And Cantor's Deli, if you don't know, Cantor's Deli is a classic Hollywood deli, and you can go there.
Best matzo ball soup.
At some point in my life, I ran across a thing where the writer described the service at a restaurant as disinterested. And it always stuck with me because I thought it was a great combination. But the service at Cantor's, I would say, is disinterested at times. They just don't seem to be interested that you're there. It's not that they don't care. That's a little farther. But, yeah, it's not interesting to them. They're like,
they've heard it all. It's been there a while.
They've heard it all. Matzo ball soup.
But this is not a plug for Cantor's.
No, it's not.
Open
it's,
space,
it's
cafe, and theater. And my themes are one-word themes that can mean multiple things. C is the next one. And we have a story about my mother losing her sight, but another woman wants to tell a funny story about cancer. You know, different C things. Tug, bug, pool, green. These are the themes.
All right. Now that you just mentioned it, I realize I do have a C story.
Well, then send it to me. Maybe you'll be in the show.
Okay.
All right.
April 2nd. All right, we're going to come down there. Now, I never followed up on this. I wanted to ask, last year or the year before, I think you guys did Sky Mall, the musical.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is It wasn't a full musical. You did a video.
It was a video. Yeah. Lindy Loundigan had this brilliant idea to do a song about Sky Mall magazine, which you used to be able to get on planes.
Does it not exist anymore?
I don't know if it does. They went under, and then they came back, and then they had a contest. So we were trying to enter this contest, and we overdid it. We overdid it. I spent a lot of money buying the products, which, by the way, I did not buy on SkyMall. I bought them on Amazon so I could return them. But it was really fun. It was a long process to write it. We had a lot of fun working on it. But when push came to shove, we were inspired to finish it by the contest, which sometimes you just need something to finish something.
Sure.
And it was really thrown together last minute, but it's pretty cute. It's pretty
funny. You guys did a great job.
Yeah.
And so the basic idea is Sky Mall is the greatest place to be.
Yeah.
Sky Mall, this, you know, and it is. It's got all this crazy stuff.
Products can save your life, yeah, essentially.
But we discount it because they're like, you're bored in the airplane.
Right.
So you're trying to give them some love.
Well,
in a way.
There's a kitsch value to it that's really fun. That I, you know, I'm always going for the offbeat, the kitsch. So that project was a lot of fun, but it was a good lesson in how not to do something in the future. Don't get too many props. Don't have too many costumes. Don't shoot on the hottest day of the year. Put together a shot list before you shoot. Little things. It did come together, and, you know, it was really fun to work with my friends for a few days.
Yeah.
But it really was Lindy Loundigan's idea. I can't take credit for that.
Sorry, you guys did a cute job.
Yeah.
Okay, now I want to switch up things completely different, because you're a painter.
Yes.
Also, you've been doing that for a long time.
Yes.
Like your whole life you've been...
No.
Since you were a child.
Well, I drew as a child.
Sure.
But I was intimidated by art. My father was an artist.
Yeah.
My sister's also artists, and I was a little intimidated to actually go for it. My father told me I was a pop artist, and at the time I didn't know that was a compliment. I thought that was an insult, that I wasn't classic.
You were not you're not a fine painter. Like.
Now, of course, I love pop art, the whole mid-century mod thing. Sky Mall had a little bit of that pop vibe in it. I love that bright, beautiful colors. I did a show, Barbie's Cousin, which was my doll, Barbie's cousin Francie, and I, and it was all 60s outfits, very mod, go-go boots, the whole deal. Oh, the set opened up like a doll case, bright colors, very Mondrian. But yeah, no, as a kid, I drew, and I know art just vicariously through my family of artists, but I didn't really start painting until a few years ago.
Well, I'll tell you the reason I'm asking.
Yes.
I notice on your website where you have a bunch of paintings.
Yes.
That there are...
ClairePartonArt.com.
ClairePartonArt.com.
Yes.
There are a lot of self-portraits. And I was curious, what is that for you? Doing a self-portrait versus other subjects? Does it feel different? Is it different?
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird when what you think you're seeing doesn't come out the way you want it, especially when the subject is yourself. And then other people, say in your class, take this art class, are like, wow, that's the best thing you ever did. And I'm thinking, oh, I look so ugly. That's amazing. Oh, my eye is really in the wrong place. You know, you have to separate yourself. It's almost like with acting. You have to learn to have it, not take it so personally. And just...
Is that how you... That's what you do?
Well,
I'm not convinced that you're successful, because the face you're making is like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, but you know what? It feels personal.
It is personal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Let's go with that.
It's like if somebody were to insult one of my cats, I'd take it very personally.
Yeah.
Oh, your cat looks like it needs to be brushed, which of course it does. I never brush it. But you know what I mean? I would take it personally.
So do you learn things about yourself by doing self-portraits?
Yep.
Tell me anything about... Yeah, some insight.
Well, it's similar to the storytelling. You learn things that you didn't know were there. You see things that you forgot were there.
About your own face.
Yeah, about your own face.
Or your quality or your expression.
Or how you're feeling. Like, I did this painting for my niece. It wasn't a self-portrait. It was of her cats. And it was a very fun, photo where one of the cats was in the shadow and one was in the light, and I thought it would be really fun and pretty and poppy and cute. But I guess I was feeling a little blue, and the painting came out really dark. And she loved it, of course. She's 18, and it was moody, and she loved it. But I didn't know that was going to come out that way. Mm-hmm. And there, it's like any creative thing. I'm glad you asked this, because there is a creative process in painting. I notice it more. Where somewhere in the middle, I just want to tear it up. It's just so torturous. It's not coming out the way I want it to. It's incredibly emotional. My hand is getting tired. Like, got it. It's got to stop. But then if you push through that, you find some sort of a resolution just so you can finish the piece. Sometimes you end up loving it more than anything you ever did. That struggle can make it better.
Yeah.
If it were easy, it wouldn't be as good, I don't think. There was one time I was doing a collage, and it was very messy, and there's tissue, and it's glued, and it's wet, and I wanted to rip it in half. But I couldn't, because it was this wet blob of paper. So I cut it. I just cut it in the middle, and it actually ended up being really great. I have it in a frame, and somebody
because it had been cut.
Yeah, it was a matter of framing it better. Right. But that struggle has been a very physical manifestation of the creative process, which has taught me about, oh God, not to get too indulgent about my process, but, you know, you learn things about yourself when you're painting. Things about how, I mean, it can be really emotional.
You learn things about how what? You didn't finish that sentence.
You learn things about how you see things. I mean, literally. And I always have my dad's voice kind of in the back of my head, and that's intimidating. But sometimes, and he's long since passed, but sometimes it's encouraging.
Now, you mentioned along the way just now, and it was also one of my questions, you paint cats.
I do.
A lot of cats.
Yes.
For yourself and for others.
Yes.
Why?
They're fun. I mean, well, people love their animals.
Yeah.
People love their pets, and it is a way for me to make a little money on the side, but painting fur is fun, and their eyes are fun, and
yeah, is there something
personalities
special
are fun.
Or technique-wise or challenging about painting cats? The special subject that they are.
Well, you can't, for example, they're hard to photograph. You can't do one with them sitting. There's no way. But, yeah, I just like cats. They're funny. And they're fun to paint. You learn. What I learned was that acrylic is not the best medium. You need oil because it has a little texture. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've painted a lot of cats as gifts and things. Maybe I'll do one for Chester.
All right. Yeah, I look forward to that. I want to bring this up as a service to you. You're immediately skeptical.
Claire needs help.
No, I'm doing this next question just to help you out. On Valentine's Day, you posted a post to make amends to your childhood classmate, Henry.
Oh, God,
and,
yeah.
And
I
think
was
you
so
should
sad.
Tell a little bit about that story again just to make yourself feel better, because you're not fully healed from that.
Well, it's a sad story.
Yeah, tell people at home, because they would like this story.
When I was a kid, and I don't know if kids still do this, we would buy those pre-made Valentines from the drugstore. And I would always try and get the cutest, hippest ones. Anyway, in fifth grade, the teacher laid down the law. You either had to give a Valentine to every student in the class or no students. You couldn't play favorites.
Right.
And so I was all prepared to get everyone's name and write them on there, you know, writing everyone's name and sign my name. It's a lot of work if you're 10. A lot of writing. I was all prepared to write everyone's name. But then my friends were saying, well, I don't want to give one to Henry. Henry was kind of this difficult kid. He wasn't always there. He would get in trouble. He was sent to the principal a lot. He just was a problem kid.
Just one of those kids, yeah.
Which now, of course, I think, wow, that poor kid, he probably had trouble at home. Things probably weren't going so well. He didn't have a lot of friends, you know. So my friend said, well, I'm just not going to sign my name on the one I give Henry. And maybe to some of the other boys. Because when you're 10, the girls don't talk to the boys don't talk to the girls. So I was torn. I thought, well, I don't want to not sign my name. What if nobody signs their name? But I ended up not signing my name on the one for Henry. And maybe two other boys I didn't sign my name.
And what happened for Henry?
Well, he was so excited. His seat was up at the front so the teacher could keep an eye on him. He was so excited to get all these Valentines. And then he started looking through them. He said, this one doesn't have a name. This one doesn't either. This one. And he threw them up in the air and he ran out of the room crying. And I felt so bad. I wanted to run after him, but I just stayed in my seat. And the teacher yelled at all of us. We just sat there looking at the ground. I felt a lot of shame about that because the whole point of everyone getting a Valentine was to include everyone. It might have even been specifically for that kid.
And so your post on Valentine's Day, what did you want to say with that?
I don't ever want anyone to feel left out again. And I'm sorry, Henry. I learned this is not a funny story.
No, it's not.
But it's sad. I hope he's okay. I don't know. Never
what
heard
happened
anything.
To Henry. Yeah.
No
well,
idea.
Well, the reason I brought it up is to help you continue to make your amends. I know you don't know where Henry is or even his last name, but
well, let's put it this way: if you ever were that kid that felt left out, I get it. I get it. I was left out a lot. I was kind of small for my age, and I didn't get. I was always picked last for the team, and I get it.
So you can apologize to the Henrys. If anybody else out there has experienced something like this at any moment, Claire is now apologizing.
I will send a Valentine to you directly with my name signed on it.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. If you're listening to the show and you would like a Valentine from Claire,
I will send it.
She will send it to you. You email me at comedydeathstar. Please. Comedy Death Star at ACS. Chester. Send me an email. comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. And we'll make sure that Claire sends you a Valentine.
I might even draw it myself.
She might even draw it herself. Okay. All right. See, now we like to have a little heartfelt moment on the show. And that was it. Not everything has to be ha-ha, hilarious. Yeah. All right.
But, you know, pain is where comedy comes from a lot of the
That's
time.
That's right. We're still not laughing about any part of this, except that, you know, we're trying. Right. Ready to change the subject?
Absolutely.
You're doing great, by the way. You got a new haircut.
I did.
It looks great.
Thank you.
You love it.
I love it.
What took so long to get it cut like this?
You know, I have really good hair. I liked having it long, but I just was ready for a change.
All right. So it's shorter.
A lot shorter.
I can't tell. Is it a little asymmetrical?
It's asymmetrical.
Yeah, it is. That looks good. The bangs, you've always had some bangs, right?
Nope.
Nope.
I grew them out for a while. One of my hairdresser friends says, your forehead is your beauty, but I have a scar on my forehead, so I wanted to cover it up. So, yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations. Cute new hairdo.
That's
a good reason for celebration.
I don't know why I said you're welcome. Thank you.
All right, here's a question.
Yes.
As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
No. I tried to have an imaginary friend, and I was very bad at it. I tried so hard. With three sisters, I wanted something for myself. But I just couldn't buy into it. I tried, but I couldn't. Same thing happened when I became a Christian in college. I really tried to believe it, but I just couldn't.
So you tried to have an imaginary friend, and like the willing suspension of disbelief got in the way.
Yeah, I guess I'm too logical. Yeah. I also wrote a whole code alphabet so I could have my own journal that nobody could understand or read.
Uh-huh.
to hide from my sisters and my mom and my dad. And like, of course, I couldn't remember the code either. But coming up with the code was a lot of fun.
So wait, did you write it, some of it in code, and then forget how to read it, or you forgot how to write it?
Yes, I abandoned the project pretty early on.
Do you have any of those books still with the code, with the coded writing in it? That would be interesting.
Wow.
Even though you can't read it. I mean, you could send it to some cryptographer.
There's probably somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you wanted to have an imaginary friend and you failed, basically.
It just was too much work.
It was too hard.
I think I'm kind of a logical person. Mm-hmm. Kind of a practical, logical person. No, I really tried. But friends of mine and my cousin who are only children, they had a lot of imaginary friends. A whole imaginary world.
Huh.
I had a dollhouse and I had trolls for my dolls. But I was not as into their storyline as I was into making the little doll furniture. I was obsessed with the decorating. Again, back to the decorating.
Well, we don't change much, you know, over time. Well, the question that I had there was...
Did I mess up your whole line of questions
great.
That I didn't know?
No, it's fantastic.
Friend?
The question, full question was, as a child, you had an imaginary friend. Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend. Where are they now?
Well, you know, that brings up feelings of abandonment. Like, of course, my imaginary friend had their own imaginary friend, and they went off to be friends with each other and left me, their creator, abandoned me and went off and lived their own life.
So it brings up more abandonment issues.
Yeah, thanks, Denzel. This is so much fun.
This is great. I'm really enjoying this.
Intense.
How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I think I tried around the time my parents were splitting up when I was 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I had a whole plan. Again, had a whole plan. I really was a planner. I would plan it all out, and I had a, you know, I was going to go to bed, hide my jacket under the covers, the whole bit.
But
when push came to shove, I decided, what am I going to do? What am I going to, I don't know how to ride the bus. I'm not going to get very far.
Ugh, it's just not worth it.
No, it wasn't worth it.
Running away.
No, and I thought of going to live with my dad, and then I thought, no, he takes too long to brush my hair in the morning. Yeah, my mom was in the hospital, and my dad had to do our hair, and he's a perfectionist, so it would take, and we're like, Daddy, we have to get to school. So no, I guess I just decided that wasn't going to work.
Running away was impractical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to hit the snooze button.
Exactly. I did really want to, though, but I never did it.
Okay.
Now it's too old to run away. Is any of this funny at all? I feel like I'm in pain right now. It's like...
Oh, it's good for me. It's working for me. We're laughing at you. I mean, with you.
Maybe it's good material, but man, I sound so sad.
I sound so sad. What's wrong with me?
Well, being the third child, you learn to not be noticed. You learn to kind of find ways to hide and do your own little thing. And I had elaborate trace. I would trace the butterflies out of the encyclopedia and color them in with my own colors. And then my grandfather, who was also an artist, he said, well, those aren't the right colors. I decided my way was fine. And
okay.
I'm going to keep doing this. I'm just not going to tell them about it.
That's the third child. I mean...
Yeah.
But it could have gone the other way, where you could have said, like, oh, man, all of my own impulses are not correct.
Right.
And you never trust them again. That also happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. But you went...
I went the other way. I found my voice, so to speak. I'm going to color these butterflies. I'm going to keep doing this because it makes me happy to disappear into this little project.
Right. I'm not sure if I asked you this question before. You know, I think that all people have a superpower, which is some quality that we just comes out of us naturally. Do you know what that is for you?
I do.
Why are you giggling? Yeah.
Because.
What is it?
Well, I can go into any store and find the best, most quality item within 5 minutes, especially like a thrift store or a yard sale. I zero in on the thing of quality immediately.
You have an eye.
I do. I have an eye. I have a talent. And how do you think I ended up with all those lamps? when we were dividing up my father's paintings, I picked the ones that I thought were the most valuable. And when there was a show of his art, those were the ones that ended up in the show. Because, and my mom, my sisters, they're like, I never noticed that painting. I want it. I'm like, well, you were there when we divided them up. This is mine.
The follow-up question is, have you ever used the superpower for evil instead of good?
I wouldn't call it evil, but definitely have found things that I ended up selling for a certain amount of money. Like, bought it. But that's just...
That's not evil. That's the American way.
eBay seller. That's just being a capitalist. You keep wanting me to be angry and evil, and
I don't want you to be angry and evil. And you're not. You've been laughing through the whole thing, and you keep looking at me like...
No, I don't think I've ever used that power for evil. Okay. And how would I, though?
I don't know. Some ideas are coming up, but it doesn't matter. Let's move on.
One way to be evil about that would be if I were to steal someone's idea. Like if I found the best idea and I stole it.
Yeah. Or if you went to visit some sweet old lady under the guise of helping her out open her medication because the childproof caps, and then you saw some stuff in her apartment and you were like, oh, I like that so much. And she said, oh, Claire, you should just take it. And meanwhile, you knew that it was worth thousands of dollars.
That wouldn't be evil because she would have offered it to me.
Yeah, but if you manipulated her.
Kind of conniving.
Anyway.
All right, let's move
on. That's the only thing I thought of. Anyway, it's not evil. It doesn't have to be. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
Well, okay, I have to have the door to the closet closed. And all the drawers have to be closed. I can't be confronted with the idea of all those clothes when I'm sleeping.
So it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, I can't think about my clothes. But if I can't sleep, here's an interesting thing I do.
You open the drawers. No.
Well, sometimes I have to, because instead of counting sheep, I count my clothes in my head. I'm a little obsessed with my clothes. So, I like my clothes. I have good taste. So, okay, I'll count in my head all the blouses, all the sweaters, all the pants, all the shoes. And then sometimes I do have to get up and go and actually count, because then I'll get two in it. But yeah, that's...
So instead of sheep, you count...
Clothes.
Clothing.
Yeah.
I was going to say Manolo Blahnik, but you don't have any Manolos. Do you have any Manolos?
No.
No. It was going to sound good. Instead of sheep, you count Manolos, but... It's not accurate.
I count my Prada.
Yeah, that's not it. So, but that's...
That's, you know what? Feel free to use that tip. It works for me. But if you really can't sleep, you'll get up and look in the closet to actually count.
And then sometimes the compulsiveness takes over and you have to get up to actually count to make sure that your imaginary count was accurate to the
real. Yes. That's very different. Rarely, but
that's
yes.
That's different. Yeah. Yes. That's a little OCD.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
But it's not a problem. Somebody was on the show here in the past couple of months, and we were talking about if you have OCD, it's not a problem, in quotations.
Unless it's a problem.
You call it a problem.
Right.
Like, no one else diagnoses you as having a problem in this area. It's up to you to say, yes, this is getting in the way of my life.
Right.
If it does, if you don't have that issue, then you're
at the same time, fine. I acknowledge it is slightly OCD. I acknowledge that.
Yeah. But that's not a problem. This doesn't ruin anything.
No, but for people who have debilitating OCD, it is a huge problem.
Yes.
Wow, Denzel, this has been like...
This is really cheerful.
The saddest hour.
All right, we're going to
have a lot to write about. What?
We got a lot of light. All right, so we're going to do a couple of last things. We're gonna
get
off all
this. Okay, great.
Yeah. You okay? You still fine?
Yeah, I'm super.
Depressed.
No, I'm happy to be here. But this is bringing up a lot of things I want to write about.
Okay. Well, then that's good. All right. I'm just following. I'm listening and watching.
Can I tell you a story about this mirror that I had that ended up in the Museum of Broken Relationships?
Yes.
So I went through a big breakup 20 years ago. He was a love of my life. We were engaged to be married. He's now famous. very famous, and I see his billboard all over town. Anyway, I had this mirror that I had bought at a swap meet. He had said, go buy us a mirror, and he gave me money, and I went to the swap meet and brought back this gorgeous antique mirror. I was so excited. It was really heavy. I had to get my friend to help me. Rose-carved frame, like 100 years old, beautiful. I brought it home, and he was in the middle of writing and didn't have time to look at it, and so I was just, felt just defeated and ashamed and just deflated. But this mirror was gorgeous, so when we broke up, I took the mirror. But, you know, even though it was beautiful, I just never really liked it. And I tried I tried to sell it many times. I brought it to a yard sale, and these girls offered me 50, and I was like, no, that's not enough money. And then I gave it to my neighbor at one point, and when he moved out, I asked for it back, like, I couldn't get rid of it, and it felt like it was haunted, or there was something really attached to it. So finally, this Museum of Broken Relationships takes relics of people's broken relationships.
So that's a real place.
It's a real place. Where in Hollywood.
In Hollywood.
It's okay. At Hollywood and Highland, near Hollywood and Highland.
Museum of Broken Relationships.
Yes, okay. brokenshipsla.org or .com.
We'll find it.
Anyway, so I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to donate this mirror. So I donated the mirror, and when I was in the lobby giving it to the curator of the museum, a dove flew into the lobby and stood on this little ledge, and I wrote in lipstick on the mirror, $100 crossed out, $50 crossed out, free, because that was the experience.
Got it.
So this little dove waited for me to do that and then flew away. It was like a Disney moment, right? So the curator and I hit it off, but I never knew if my mirror was in the museum. But I happened to be driving by, and there was a photo of my mirror. I thought, oh, it's still in the exhibit. Then I go online, and this mirror is all over Instagram. It's all over Facebook. Everyone who goes to the museum takes a photo of this mirror because you can't look at it without seeing yourself. So I go to the museum, and she's like, Claire, it's the Mona Lisa. Everyone wants to see the mirror.
It's the Mona Lisa of broken relationships, this mirror, yeah.
So I texted my ex, who I'm still kind of in touch with.
And I'm sorry, it still has the lipstick that says $100.
Yes.
$50. So that really makes it more
that
than just,
made it a better,
more than just a mirror.
Yes. Yeah. So I told him, and I wrote like this little yard sale ad, Craigslist ad, that's very clever, like, please take away the pain of my relationship. Please bring a friend. It's too heavy to carry the weight of my broken relationship down the stairs by yourself. I texted him, and he said, wow, so sad. Funny. Really good writing. Well, 20 years after the breakup, my Emmy-winning ex validated my writing. Yeah, so go check it out.
I'm going to check it out. The Museum of
Broken relationships. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of objects there and people's stories about them. And some of the stories are funny. Some of the stories are sad. Some of them are just weird. Like somebody
like
donated their breast implants. Like that was kind of weird. Yeah.
Donated their... Did they,
breast implants.
Did they get? Did this woman get new ones?
Yeah.
And so the old ones, yeah. Maybe she got like the
saline
ones.
She sent them in like
out.
This... The curator, Alexis, was telling us they were sent, like, super taped-up packaging, and she wasn't sure. She opened them with gloves. Like, she wasn't even sure if this was legal. I guess it's legal.
That's weird. It used to be in your body, and now
so what do you do with your breast implants? You donate them to the museum. What do you do with your mirror you can't sell on Craigslist? You donate it to the museum.
All right.
Sorry, took you off on a
no,
long
that's,
tangent.
That's all. That's it was a story. See, you say tangent, I say story.
It is a story. Yeah. It's a good story.
Have you told that one on stage?
I think you know what? If we were to do an event at that museum, I would.
I have this thing which you may or may not know about, where I have told family and friends that they have permission to hit me in the face with a pie.
Oh.
Anytime.
Oh.
And without warning.
Ugh.
And the reason I did it is to make them happy, right? Throwing a pie at someone is usually aggressive.
But you have
and
glasses.
Mean.
That's dangerous.
And I wanted to take the aggressiveness out. And I wanted people to be able to throw a pie with love and generosity. And I wanted to be able to receive a pie with love and generosity. If you were to do this, give permission to one person
One person?
Anyone you want.
I mean, just because I was just talking about him, the man that I had that mirror with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because he's a funny guy. Yeah. He's also a sweet person, mm-hmm. sometimes. I'd be curious if he would actually do it. He might not. Yeah, for all the times I was a pain in the ass, here's a pie. For all the times I cried as a way of getting out of an argument, for all the times that I twisted something to my own end, the meaning of something to my own end, or all the times I didn't hold up my end of the bargain, yeah, here's a pie.
And so, yeah, this is still working? Like, it's a gift you would give him?
Yeah.
That he would have permission to do this thing that he, you know, may or may not want to do? Or you're not sure? We're not sure how, right. how he would feel about it.
I don't know how he would feel about it. I think he would laugh and think it was kind of weird.
I can handle that.
Because it is humiliating to get a pie in your face. Let's face it. I've never had that, I don't think. But I wouldn't. I remember in college somebody smushed a bunch of snow in my face once. I was furious. Of course, yeah. He was trying to flirt with me, but that's not how you flirt.
Not in college.
By the way.
Elementary school, it's totally how you flirt. By the time you get to be 18, you're supposed to know that there are some other ways.
Yeah.
Did he also say, girls stink, you have girl cooties, and then do the snow?
I don't know what his problem was.
You didn't sleep with him, did you?
No.
Okay, thank you. If you would like to make this offer.
Oh.
To anyone.
Okay.
I mean, I recommend friends and family only. It can't okay. be open season for any wingnut, you know, to hit you in the face with a pie. That doesn't make any sense. So, friends and family, or you can do it one at a time. If you would like to make that offer, you can take this card. On the front is the star, Soupy Sales,
oh,
star
uh-huh.
on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah,
of the pie.
Love it.
And on the back it says, pie yourself free. It's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime and without warning. You can follow Pie Yourself Free on Facebook and Twitter if you're really inclined. But feel free to give that card to anyone.
Great.
Or not.
You well, know. That's fun.
And
thanks.
I'm going to tell you that if you would like to hit me in the face with a pie,
oh.
You're always allowed to do that.
Well,
for any reason.
I would want to do it just because it might be fun.
Sure.
But I don't want to. I don't have a desire to hit you.
No, that's what I'm saying. You could do it just because it's going to be fun.
Yeah, okay.
If that's the thing that turns you on.
I might.
Okay. All right, here's the last thing. You know, I anagram stuff on this show.
Oh.
I anagrammed your name, Claire Parton.
Yes.
And here are the few interesting things that came up. I don't know if any of these ring a bell. Could you read those?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Panic trailer. That's funny. Art in replica. Mm-hmm. A pliant crier. Cranial tripe.
You laughed at panic trailer.
Yeah.
What came up for
Panic's
you?
Panic's just funny. Panic trailer. It's like, you know, here's the trailer for my panic. Here's a 2-minute trailer for my life.
Like
in panic.
Pre-anxiety.
Yeah. My cousin and I thought it'd be really fun at the Women's March to make panic cakes and sell them. Like pancakes, but panic cakes. I thought that was a good idea.
Did you sell any or just gave them away?
We didn't do it. I didn't go to Washington. I stayed here. Went to our Amazing March.
Yeah.
Cranial tripe is, well, that's kind of what this was. Just little thoughts coming out of the head. Pliant.
Do you mean that in, so the show, being on the show, has been cranial tripe?
Not in a bad way.
That was my question. Is it, you could mean it in a good way or a bad way?
No, it's just kind of, you know, stuff that, just okay. kind of stuff, musings.
So neutral, not good or bad.
Neutral.
Neutral.
Tripe. But it's funny. It just sounds fun.
It's a good image, right? Cranial tripe.
Art in replica sounds like some snotty, like, you know, term for reproduced Van Goghs, like,
exactly.
but in, disguised in a way that people don't really get that it's reproduced.
Yeah, I did that one because I thought you would send you somewhere.
Yeah.
Art in replica.
and
how about this one? A pliant crier. Do you cry easily? Can I manipulate you into crying? Because then you would be a pliant crier.
You probably could. I don't cry very often, mm-hmm. but I do know how to cry. As an actor, I can.
Okay. So, pliant. Yeah, that means manipulable.
You know, easily manipulated.
Thank you so much. I've never tried. Easily manipulated crier. Maybe. Pliant. You don't seem like a pliant person. I don't think it's easy to push you around. Right?
I mean,
not that I've really tried, but...
Well, I'm amenable, but no, if I've made up my mind, I'm pretty decisive.
Claire's a pushover. There you go.
No. Yes, that's fun. Those anagrams are fun.
All right. Well, none of them were like a home run, like, oh, yeah, that's me. I'm going to put that on a T-shirt. That's my next band name.
The Panic trailer is funny, though.
I like that you would have a pre-anxiety attack warming up for the real, the full anxiety attack.
Yeah.
I can see you using this, actually.
Panic trailer?
Well, I think it'll come up for you again. That's my prediction.
Okay.
That this notion of a pre-anxiety attack.
Right. It's like
pre-anxiety attack. That's going to make sense for you later down the road.
Okay.
I'm just guessing. So let me know if I'm on target.
Well, maybe like the imaginary friend, I will create the anxiety ahead of time to plan ahead for the actual anxiety.
Oh, right. Save time.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else we want to let people know about where to find you, where to see you, how to send you money?
Ooh, I do have a website, clareparton.com.
And Parton is P-A-R-T-I-N.
Yes, C-L-A-I-R-E-P-A-R-T-I-N. I have the art website is clareparton.art.com. The Moments of Clarity is a Facebook page.
All right.
C-L-A-I-R-E-I-T-Y. And the first show is April 2nd at Open Space. Well, we've had four, but first show of this year. April
2017.
At Open Space Cafe on Fairfax.
All right. Fantastic. Well, I would like to thank you, my very special guest, Claire Parton. Always funny and thought-provoking.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you think so.
That's how I describe you.
I'm going to go home and cry now.
If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug,
ooh,
you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, or I'll be back next week. Claire, you will not be back next week.